You are listening to the Vet Podcast, presented by veterinarian Dr. Brian Greger from New Zealand. Join us as we discuss pet health issues from around the world.
How's this for an opener of a consultation? This dog is all mama's living for. If it dies, she dies. The human-animal bond is strong, but for the elderly, the animal can be the reason for living. Let's look at the ramifications and the benefits of pet ownership for older people. Following this, Scott Arnold from Canada reports in and discusses a nasty fungal infection called blastomycosis. And we finish off with our resident pocket pet vet, Richard Grubb from the UK, who in this episode talks about infectious diseases in rabbits. As a veterinarian, it is not uncommon for a pet to be presented to me on behalf of a frail older person by a friend or family member, and having the forceful statement made to me, "This wee dog is all that is keeping mum alive. If the dog dies, mum will have nothing to live for, and she will probably die." Talk about no pressure. Unfortunately, not infrequently, after the animal has passed away, the old owner's name appears in the death notices. The animal-human bond is strong, but it appears to be even stronger in senior citizens. There are a number of studies that demonstrate that senior citizens that have pets tend to have better physical health and mental well-being than those that don't. On a very basic level, a pet supplies a sense of purpose to the owner. It gives them something to care for. The pet requires exercising, feeding, grooming. Without wanting to oversimplify things, it gives a reason to get up in the morning. Following on from this, the pet will lead to a regular routine. For example, the cat wants to be fed at 8 in the morning, so there is the reason to get out of bed. The little dog will need exercise, so on with the lead and out for a walk. This routine will then have beneficial knock-on effects. It has been recorded that having to feed a pet regularly can remind the owner to eat themselves. Having to buy pet food reminds the owner to buy food for themselves. Exercising the dog has huge benefits for the owner, as it is obviously forcing them to exercise as well. There are huge benefits to cardiac health, muscles are used, and there is a decrease in blood triglyceride levels in pet owners, which has to be a good thing. Now let's look at the social implications of pet ownership. Dogs are a major factor in initiating conversations between people. We see this every day in our waiting room, but the same thing happens when the dog has been taken for a walk. Pets supply companionship, which will help buffer against social isolation, as well as decreasing the feelings of loneliness, and again, as the pet supplies a sense of purpose in life, can help fight depression. Pets also satisfy the need for touch and being touched, and a big thing is that they are non-judgmental. They don't hold a grudge. There is evidence that seniors with pets visit the doctor less as well. All this paints a very compelling reason for senior citizens to have a pet, but I have seen some cases where it is not such a good idea. It is important to fit the pet with the status and ability of the owner. The owner has to be both mentally and physically capable of caring for the pet. We have dealt with a couple of cases where the owner simply forgets to feed the pet. The amount of exercise the pet will require has to be taken into account. A large dog may require a 5 kilometre walk every day. Is the owner up to this? Even the nature of the pet is important. Quite often we see our aged clients come into the clinic with a very boisterous little dog that jumps up on the owner. It is not uncommon for aged people to be on drugs such as warfarin for heart conditions, which slows down blood clotting time and leads easily to bruising. You can imagine the state some of these people's arms and legs are in, covered in bruises and scratches. We also see cases of owners tripping over the pet and causing major injuries to themselves. Encouraging your aged parents or friends to get a pet is a decision that should not be made lightly, but in the right circumstances, there may well be some huge benefits in this action. Mm-hmm. Blastomycosis is one of those diseases that in our area we only read about, but in some parts of the world, particularly North America and particular places in North America, it is of some concern. Scott Arnold from Ontario in Canada is in one of these hotspots for blastomycosis. Scott gives us a quick rundown on this nasty disease.
Blastomycosis, or blasto as it is often called, is a very serious, potentially deadly, systemic fungal infection that affects both dogs and people. You wonder, how do you get blasto? Well, blasto is caused by inhaling the spores of the fungus. These spores are usually found in organic-rich soil, as well as decaying wood and vegetation. They're usually found near fresh water, such as streams and lakes. What happens is you're walking along, you disrupt the vegetation that contains the spores are then inhaled, where they travel down to the lungs. These spores can also enter through punctured wounds. The spores then multiply at their site, and then enter into circulation, where they travel by the vascular system to lymph nodes and other parts of the body. Now, blasto is found in Ontario, especially endemic around the Georgian Bay area. It also can be found throughout the United States. The incubation period is usually between 21 and 45 days after inhaling the spores. Common sites of infection are usually the lungs, the lymph nodes, the eyes, skin, and bone. Now, classical clinical signs of blastomycosis usually include fever, cough, weight loss, the pet is lethargic, usually also will have swollen lymph nodes. The problem with this disease is it's very often missed, both by doctors, human doctors, as well as veterinarians. If they're not looking for this disease, it often will imitate other diseases, such as pneumonia or cancer. The main trick of this disease is to get on it right away and treat them with antifungal drugs for long-term use, usually between 4 to 6 weeks minimum. Now, the problem with blasto is it also can reoccur. Sometimes months later, after you thought you got rid of the infection will show up in the eye, as well as the prostate, as well as the testes, and other locations. The main message here is blastomycosis is around. It's best if you're visiting certain areas to ask a local veterinarian if they have blasto. And if your pet develops any of these clinical signs, make sure you mention to your veterinarian that you were visiting one of these areas so he can put blastomycosis at the top of his list of rule-outs.
And finally, in this episode of the Vet Podcast, a resident pocket pet vet, Richard Grubb, discusses some of the nasty infectious diseases rabbits can get. I'd like to welcome back Richard Grubb from the UK, our resident rabbit expert again, who this time is going to talk to us about infectious diseases in rabbits.
Well, there are two major infectious diseases that, at least in the UK, we are concerned about. One is myxomatosis, which isn't present everywhere, but is present in North America, South America, Europe, and Australia, I think. And the other one is RCD or VHD virus, which is a bit more widespread. Myxomatosis is a pox virus mainly affecting the skin and can cause quite severe swellings in the face, particularly the eyes, the nose, and also in the genital area, and has a rather prolonged course of progression of disease over about 7 to 14 days. The rabbit gets progressively weaker, gets a discharge from the eyes, swellings and nodules over the head particularly, but all through the skin potentially. And eventually, most of the time, they will succumb and unfortunately die. It's reasonably difficult to treat, but some rabbits will survive with supportive care, keeping them in a warm environment, providing lots of fluid, and antibiotics to control any secondary infections. But the main way to prevent it is vaccination where the vaccination is available. Myxomatosis is mainly spread by biting insects, including fleas predominantly, but also mosquitoes, the rabbit fur mite, Kylotiella, and biting lice as well. So where vaccine is not available, but the disease is present, then very strict insect control can be helpful in preventing the spread of disease. Viral hemorrhagic disease, VHD or RCD, or rabbit calici virus disease, is a bit nastier in that usually it will lead to no other clinical symptoms other than sudden depression and death within 12 to 36 hours. It's mainly spread by direct contact with other rabbits, but can be spread in the air. It can be spread through carcasses of dead rabbits and can be spread on fomites such as hay, birds' feet. There's some suggestion that even birds of prey may spread the disease through as they catch rabbits. There isn't really any treatment, unfortunately, for a viral hemorrhagic disease, although rabbits under the age of 10 weeks are immune to it, so it only affects older rabbits. Again, there is a vaccine available, more widely available than the myxomatosis vaccination, which seems to be fully protective. In terms of prevention, other than making sure that wild rabbits cannot get into the pet rabbit's area and making sure that any hay or bedding is bought from a reputable source and is clean and fresh, there's not much else other than the vaccination that can be done.
You have been listening to the Vet Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Google Play, or bookmark us in your favourite podcast player. To contact us, message through Facebook or email vetpodcast@gmail.com.